Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hour number 2, Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we welcome in our friend Caroline Fenton to the program, host of Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. You can check it out every morning here on 102.5, The Game, starting at 11 o'clock. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Hello, I'm doing great. Enjoyed a full night's sleep last night. So we were talking about the break, just preparing ourselves for not a full night's sleep tonight.
Definitely not. Definitely not going to have one of those tonight. We'll get into game 2 between the Predators and the Canucks here in just a few minutes. I do want to start on the draft because we were just talking about this. I think we know Chicago at 1 what they're doing. I'm pretty sure we know it at Washington and at number 2 what they're doing. And I feel fairly confident about New England at 3, but we'll see. But let's go from that window. New England to New York, right in front of the Titans. So the Patriots, the Cardinals, the Chargers, the Giants. Of those teams, who do you think has the biggest opportunity to really blow this thing open, cause a little chaos in the draft, be that either trading out or maybe going with a pick that people aren't necessarily expecting them to go with?
I think you could say Arizona maybe, but also I believe that if Arizona trades out of 4, then whoever is trading up to 4 is going to take a quarterback, is probably going to convince themselves that J.J. McCarthy is their franchise quarterback. And I do believe that they will most likely be wrong, but who knows? Everybody thought Patrick Mahomes was the 4th best quarterback in that draft. So, you know, what do we know? Yeah. I would say more so the Chargers, just because I think the Chargers could do anything except take a quarterback. They could trade out, and there might be a team that wants to move up to take a Marvin Harrison if J.J. McCarthy does go 4. There could be a team that wants to trade up to take a left tackle and leapfrog the Titans. I don't think that that would be the wisest decision, but also who knows? Like, anything could happen. Or also the Chargers could stick in that spot and take the best non-quarterback available. So I think the Chargers could do a million different things. I think that that pick is probably up for sale, and it could be a wild card because it'll likely be a team that's trading up to not take a quarterback if, in fact, J.J. McCarthy's off the board at 4. But I think that 4 and 5 picks are really wild cards. But you say you think you know that what New England is doing. I feel like we've been told what New England is going to do and go quarterback at 3, just best quarterback available. If the Commanders go Drake May, they'll go Jaden Daniels and vice versa. I don't know if I'm completely convinced that the Patriots are going quarterback there, just because I don't think the Patriots have the infrastructure in place for a rookie quarterback. I think the Patriots could look at it and say, look, we could get a hell of a player, not at the quarterback position, and build around the quarterback until we have a team in place for a young quarterback to thrive. Or, frankly, the Patriots could trade back and collect more picks and address more positions of need. So I think the Patriots are more of a wild card than we expect, but it's that 3, 4, 5 spot that could completely throw the first half of the draft off and subsequently throw off what the Titans want to do at 7.
Well, that's the thing. There's been some, I guess, smoke, and I can't even remember where anything's coming from anymore about what you just talked about, Caroline, about the Patriots.
That's of the internet.
Yeah, exactly. The dark web about the Patriots possibly doing that. I mean, to me, like I was saying earlier, like, God, if I'm a Patriots fan, like, I hear what you're saying for sure. But also, great, build an infrastructure, and then who is your quarterback that you're going to get? Like, Drake May, to me, is an awfully enticing prospect. I know he's not perfect, but, man, if I was a Patriots fan, I'd be furious about that. But, yeah, it's like, so there's a little bit of smoke about them doing what you're talking about, maybe thinking that way. So then it's like, okay, so does that now actually mean they are going quarterback? I will be shocked if they don't end up, if it doesn't go Williams, Daniels, May. But I've been shocked before. So let's go with the Titans, Caroline. We were talking about this possibility. Obviously, we've talked a lot about, you know, trading back and a bunch of teams could maybe try to get in there. What if it is the Bills are so motivated to get up to 7, they're willing to give you a haul to get out of there, but that's a huge drop. What do you think about that?
We talked about this yesterday, and I'm not anti-trade back in the slightest, but you better make it worth my while. Like, you better blow me away so much so that I'm willing to move out of the highest draft pick that the Titans have had in quite some time. Was it the highest draft pick since Corey Davis? The highest draft pick in quite some time to move back to 28, which essentially I know it's the first round, but doesn't 28 feel like kind of like a second round? Like, you better make it worth my while. And we were talking about this yesterday, and I saw a mock draft on Bleacher Report, and it was the Bills get 7 and the Titans get a late second rounder, a late third rounder, and a first rounder next year. And Willie was like, yeah, absolutely. I get an extra second and a third for sure. And I'm like, no, 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 no. I'm not doing that for a second rounder, a third rounder, and a first rounder next year. That might be, you know, 20 at the very best. I'm not doing that. Buffalo's going to have to give me, I would say, a second round this year, a second round next year, a first round next year, several picks in this year's draft. Like, you're going to have to blow me away. And even still being blown away, I don't know if it's enough for me, because this team needs good players. And yeah, you can get a good player at 28. Absolutely you can. But the likelihood of you getting a good player is much higher in the top 15 than it is in the latter 15. I need to be guaranteed that the Titans step away with a player in the first round of this year's draft that is, you know, a foundational piece for the next 10 to 15 years. At 28, can you get that? Sure. I don't feel great about it. So even 28 is, even for a haul, makes me really nervous. I feel like for me, my point of demarcation is like 13 with the Raiders, maybe 14 with the Saints.
Caroline, on the Preds front, game 2 coming up tonight, so still an opportunity in front of them to even things up and come back 1-1. When you look back at game 1, there's a couple different things that stand out. Obviously, Saros giving up that goal, Forsberg not playing great, but if you had to identify one thing that just has to get better for them tonight to have a chance to win, what do you think it'll be?
I think it has to be Forsberg. Like, he was such a non-factor on Sunday night. I found myself several times in that game thinking, where the heck is Forsberg? And every time I noticed him, it was for something bad. Like, he just couldn't hold on to the puck. So I think it has to be Forsberg, because you're not going to win a game in this series with Forsberg playing the way that he played on Sunday night. And yeah, Tommy Novak has to be better. He played like it was his first playoff game. So he needs to be better. Carrier needs to be better. But those storylines, I think, are secondary to me. They're still important, but they're secondary to me. The primary storylines and the things that need to be better are Forsberg and Saros. Saros let in, I'll use Ryan O'Reilly's word, a muffin. And that can't happen in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I think it's for me, it's Forsberg, that he got you here. He largely carried the team for the first half of the season, even when the rest of the team wasn't playing very well. And of course, as we know, he largely carried you for the latter half of the season as well. What got you there has got to work, and Forsberg is a big part of what got you there.
How much do you think, Caroline, this series will inform and maybe shape Barry Trotz's offseason to come?
I think a big part of it is Saros, because he's coming down to a very pivotal offseason, and I think that next Saros's payday, whether it's here or anywhere else, is going to be substantial. It's going to be $8 million, 7 to 8 years. Like, you would be investing into Saros this offseason. So I need to be convinced that he can be that elite goaltender that can steal you a game, that can steal you a couple of games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And look, it's not to say that, well, Saros didn't play well in game 1, so kick him to the curb and on to the next one. I'm not saying that, but I do think that this is a very pivotal series for Saros to prove that he can do it in the playoffs. I don't completely buy into the, well, Saros is 3-8 in the playoffs, so he can't do it. He's not a playoff goaltender. All of those games have very different stories. But I do think that this is a pivotal one, and it should, frankly, it should shape how Barry Trotz approaches this offseason.
It's going to be really interesting. Big game tonight, obviously, for the Predators. We're 2 days away from the NFL draft. Lots going on this week. Caroline, looking forward to listening at 11 o'clock today to hear you guys break it all down. And thanks so much for taking time to be with us this morning.
Series is over, apparently.
That's what I hear.
Yeah,
I heard that
sky is
yesterday.
Falling.
went for Preds in six, and after one game, it's Vancouver in five. That's a wild swing.
Woo, that's a big flip.
Wild swing. The Jared Stillman sports book is truly overwhelming.
thank you, Caroline.
I'd appreciate y'all. Get some sleep tonight.
We'll give it a try. Caroline Fenton, our guest here on Robbie and Rexler, joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock. We'll react to what Caroline had to say. Got more of your thoughts to get to on the NFL draft. We'll get back into Preds and Canucks coming up later this hour as well. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexler, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Appreciate Caroline Fenton for being with us in the last segment. Joe, some thoughts on the text line about the potential move back with the Bills. Cam on the text line says it would take the equivalent of the two first, two second, and a third, potentially 28-60 this year, their first and third next year, and the second the year after that. They're the ones trying to move. You make the Bills pay. 7-28 would be potentially going from Joe Alt to Tyler Guyton or Patrick Paul. So we'd end up with an athlete project at left tackle. This is from Cam on the text line, worried about the difference in quality at left tackle.
Yeah. Well, no doubt. Especially if you end up just picking it at 28 from there, you can move around after that, but I agree. You have to, that's so much of that goes into the evaluation of, okay, if you're left there, and again, maybe you don't even take a tackle there, but if you do, like a Tyler Guyton is definitely, someone with very good traits, with kind of like Amarius Mims, not as many starts or some questions about him and things like that. Still definitely high level potential. As far as what you're asking for, I mean, of course you ask for the world. I mean, but you know, these trades do, I mean, those charts are handy, you know, I mean, you add up the points, and so the points, you know, I think sometimes, like when Robinson traded the number one pick, when it's like, you know, when everybody knows who the player is and it's the number one pick, sometimes you can get an absolute ridiculous haul. For the most part, trades should be kind of tallied up by the points, you know, and I think most GMs do it that way. I mean, they, you know, they try to stick pretty close to that. And if you go by the points, it's not like, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, seconds and firsts and all this stuff. I mean, that's too much, but you're still talking about a 21 point drop. So, or 21 spot drop. So it's significant without question. I mean, and you know, we'll see. I mean, we'll see if the Bills want to actually give up that much to move up. It really depends on who's there and how much, how highly they think of whichever receiver would be there. Like I said, reading through this Feldman story, I'll tell you what, one thing about this, the Feldman story that comes back that is interesting on the receiver front is multiple guys saying, man, I really wish Marvin would have run. I really wish Marvin would have tested, you know, it'll be interesting if he goes later than hoped, does this draft process for him change how people think? Because I've kind of been of the mind it's going to just go more and more that way, but maybe he did hurt himself because people are like, well, maybe he's afraid and he's just doesn't run that well. Nothing like football to tell you how good someone is. We've seen him play football, so I think he'll be fine. But it's interesting that a lot of people who are making the who are evaluating these players to possibly choose them are saying that.
Yeah, that it is really interesting. I can't get over, since we brought it up earlier, like I can't get over like the history of Titans first round picks. It's not great. Like when you're looking at it, I mean, I'm trying to go through picks that we know for sure definitely worked out, and not only just worked out, but worked out to the level of where they were picked. Like we'll see on Skoronski, you know, Burks. I think most people have probably made a determination, you know. Jeffrey Simmons in 2019 worked out clearly. Taylor Lewan, I would argue, worked out for a long, long period of time at 2014. I mean, you could say Jack Conklin worked out, but I mean, he was the eighth overall pick and didn't make it to a second contract here. So there's that.
Yeah,
I mean, other than
that's
that,
an interesting one. Yeah.
there's Chris Johnson in 08. Michael Griffin was a good player taken in 07, yet Pac-Man in 05. And there was a whole bunch, but he was sixth overall. I mean, he wasn't a sixth overall caliber player here. So, like, it's the list is pretty short in terms of like impactful first round picks that have really been worthy of where they've been picked by the Tennessee Titans.
Well, the sweet spot is Floyd in 99 and 2000.
Correct.
Taking the freak at 16 and 99, Javon Kearse, and then taking Keith Bullock at 30 in 2000. Now that's big time back-to-back first round picks.
Well, and even they didn't have a first round pick in 2001, and they got Haynesworth in 02. So that three of Javon Kearse, Keith Bullock, and then Haynesworth, that's a pretty good run right there.
And then obviously, also Floyd. I mean, most of the best stuff happened under Floyd, but 95 and 96 back to back, McNair, Eddie George. That's pretty good.
Not bad. But it's been a while. Like, I mean, think
yes.
about
And that's they were in Houston when that happened. So, yes.
Well, but just think about recent, right? Like, we'll see on Skoronski. We'll see what sort of player he is. I think, Bill Callahan, that's probably something we've not talked enough about. Like, we talk about Bill Callahan with his pick. Bill Callahan helping Skoronski probably going to be as impactful for him as anything that we've seen to this point. But I
Yep.
mean, you got Burks, nope. Farley, nope. Isaiah Wilson, nope. Rashawn Evans in 18, Corey Davis and Adoree Jackson in 17. There's been a lot of bad in the first round recently for the Titans.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. Obviously, there's a lag, but you think about all the really good work John Robinson did immediately to improve the roster. And of course, he wasn't the one who picked Mariota. I mean, the 16 draft as a whole was amazing. And then even, some good, you go in there with like some Jonnu Smith and some Harold Landry and, some good picks. And then 19 was maybe the best Titans draft ever. But man, I mean, such a run of opportunity when they had a really good roster to keep adding to it, and just imagine how different things could be if they didn't completely whiff so many times.
I got a texter that says, sounds like the Preds, two decades of drafts just to have a small amount of good players, a few great players, and a lot of bad picks. Neither team has been good at picking superstars or household names. And look, I mean, you're going to miss on draft picks. You can go through each team's draft history, and there's some absolute duds in there. There's no question about it. But like, if Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan are going to be the duo, Joe, that bring the Titans back into prominence and to a place where they're competing for a Super Bowl, the drafting has got to get way better than it's been the last 5, 6 years around here.
No doubt. It's what it's all about. I mean, there's only so much fixing you can do in free agency. Free agency is important too, but if you consistently draft poorly, it'll show up, and you will be out of a job. And if you consistently draft well, then you're at least going to be solid. Wes says, are these first round picks more on the player showing it's more on quality of coaching them? I mean, there's different situations with different guys, but for the most part, I think it's evaluation. I don't think Mariota or Locker or Young are great quarterbacks in different scenarios. I don't. I mean, I think they all had sort of limitations or issues that kept them from being great. Like Rashawn Evans. And I just think it was a I think he was he's a great example, and every year we see it's like the traits are amazing, right? So it's like, yeah, with these kind of traits, I mean, I'll give you an example of someone I actually do think is a enticing possibility for the Titans. Chop Robinson of Penn State, a guy who's going to be right around late first, but maybe he sneaks into the second. And I'm not comparing to Rashawn Evans, but it's the same sort of thing. Like, he didn't produce, wasn't consistent as a playmaker, kind of a one-trick pony as a pass rusher, but the traits are incredible. Sometimes that does work out. With Rashawn Evans, he wasn't an instinctive football player. So he was an incredible athlete and a great guy and all these things, but he just wasn't very good at playing football.
Right.
And again, that's where, like, I think some people get in trouble picking players. You want to have all the twitchy traits that you can get, but ultimately, are you good at playing football? Do you see it? Do you react a half second quicker than other guys? All that stuff. And I think sometimes the film still gets sacrificed for testing too much.
We'll get back into the Preds and Canucks coming up next as well. Take more of your thoughts also on the NFL draft on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Louisville Bats on the road. Pregame at 4:50, first pitch at 5:05. With coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic Hits app and at 93.3ClassicHits.com. Sounds baseball on 93.3 Classic Hits presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Kieser here with you on our on Robbie and Rexroad. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text line. I got a texter that says, Joe is preaching when it comes to the NFL draft, to which I have offered the nickname Reverend Rexroad. What do we think?
Ooh. Okay.
I like it.
I don't hate that. Well, it's like, you know, Run DMC, one of my childhood, you know, seminal moment for me was getting, you know, a Run DMC tape in like 1985.
Sure.
And Run is Rev Run now. You know, he's a reverend. He's,
yeah.
I could be Rev Rex.
I don't hate it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you. Whatever you thought I was preaching about, I don't know exactly, but yeah, I mean, just playing football. Playing football. That really is what it's about, right? So I'm seeing this Marvin Harrison stuff.
I know.
And hey, man, I mean, I'm not disputing what some of these folks are saying about neighbors being a little bit more explosive and having some things to his game that are better than Harrison's. And neighbors also is a great football player. Don't get me wrong, but like the Marvin Harrison Jr. stuff, people wishing he tested. I'm hearing that. And we'll see Thursday if he goes, you know, down out of the top five, and I guess you could then look back and say, man, maybe you should have tested. But I'm sure these guys watched him play football, right? I mean, I watched him
hope so.
Some. I didn't watch him like these guys need to watch him, but whenever I watched him, and that includes like at Pro Day at Ohio State last year, yeah, you want that guy on your team. He's a top five pick. So we'll see.
We will see. Joe, back on the Preds front, game two coming up tonight against the Vancouver Canucks. We'll have Adam Vingan joining us at 8 o'clock. So looking forward to that. We mentioned yesterday, a pretty distinct advantage that Vancouver has is down the middle, right? I mean, they move JT Miller around. He can play on the wing, but he plays down the middle. He can play center. So you got Miller down the middle, obviously Elias Pettersson and the gigantic contract that he's just signed with Vancouver. And then there's Elias Lindholm as well. So that kind of three-headed monster down the middle, very difficult to contend with, very formidable for other teams to try to match. The Predators do not match that down the middle. Like, they've got Ryan O'Reilly, who's a really good player. Colton Sissons is good. He's not to the level, obviously, of those guys we're talking about. Novak is good. He's not to the level of those guys that we're talking about. So how do you overcome that if you're the Predators? We talk all the time about, like, building a team down the middle and how the Predators, if they're, in my opinion, eventually going to get to the point where they're consistently competing for a Stanley Cup, you have to find more answers down the middle at the center ice position. So in this specific matchup, in this series, if you're the Predators, where you know you do not have the advantage in that matchup, how do you overcome that if you're the Predators and find a way to win this series?
I don't know. That's a good question. You have to play, you know. One, you have to be in the battle, and you have to, as you said earlier, like, you have to decide to play physically, and wherever you are physical on the ice, like, those guys need to play physical. Forsberg, yes, is a good example. You know, a guy like Novak is, I mean, Tommy Novak, I was very interested. Well, with Novangelista in particular, is one game, you know, I split those two, and I really like what I saw from Evangelista in game one, and I didn't like as much of what I saw from Novak in game one. But also keep in mind that, I mean, it is harder for a centerman, especially with some of these matchups, you know? And that, so, I mean, like a guy like him, He has some special skills. Playoff hockey sometimes takes guys like him and makes it harder for them to be impactful. But, you know, they need that line to do something for them. I mean, I think it's like, you know, the Preds have in the past, whenever you talk about center matchups, I do have to go back to, I know, go back to 2017, but like, think about like what Freddie Gaudreau and Colton Sissons did with some matchups that were just awful on paper. Right. I mean, you know, there's things you can do. They also had an incredible decor back then. So it's just a collective. You said this earlier too. It's collectively get to your game and play your style of hockey. I thought early in the game they did get speed through the neutral zone for a bit. They weren't able to really sustain it in the O zone, but like that's what they're trying to do, is get speed through the neutral zone. And I mean that's what they've got to do more of tonight. But I mean, those matchups are absolutely difficult, you know, and they need. They've had a very much sum of the parts kind of approach for this stretch of being a really good hockey team. So I liked like what I saw from Kiefer Sherwood. Actually, I liked some of what we saw from Michael McCarron the other night too.
Yeah.
And obviously they're matching him up some with, you know, those top lines. I mean, they need him to be physical and impactful and make a difference when they're matching that up as a defensive, you know, matchup for one of their top lines.
I would be in the chest of Pettersson all night long tonight if I'm the Predators. Try to make life as difficult as possible for him, whether that's Sissons out there, whoever he ends up on the ice with. I would be in his. I actually thought they did a decent job on him in the first game. Like JT Miller is really the one that got loose, and I know he didn't score, but if you give him the opportunities he got in game one, he's gonna make you pay for it. So you got to find a way to slow him down. Like it's not a matchup down the middle, like going man for man at center, that you're probably going to win. But that's when you need your defenseman to come help you out. Like there are ways to overcome that. I mean, otherwise, I mean, you would just look around the league and Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin would win every year, or Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl would win every year. I mean, there are ways to overcome it. It's not just about who has the advantage at center ice. But like I think too, like when you look at that advantage for Vancouver, one of the ways you counteract that is by having the puck more. That's the thing that really stood out to me in game one. The Predators have been a team for the most part this year that have done a pretty good job of possessing the puck, and Vancouver had it a lot, and they didn't necessarily generate a ton of great looks out of it, but they had the puck a lot, and it felt like the Predators were a little too one and done at times throughout the game. And what I mean by that is coming in, you get maybe one good look and all of a sudden the puck's at the corner, it's going the other way and you're playing defense again. So can you sustain tonight a little bit more offensive zone time and make those guys defend a little bit more? That's how you counteract it, is playing the offensive zone. I mean, it's, you're not going to just go blow for them with, you know, with Colton Sissons matching up against Elias Pettersson and think you're going to come out on the better end of that most times. Like you gotta find a way to really be on top of pucks. And what I mean by that is really impressing it up upon the physical part of the game and then transitioning up the ice. And I thought Vancouver did a decent job as the game went on of kind of slowing them down in that area. Some of that was the Predators' own doing and not executing passes at a high level. You got to be really sharp with that tonight, execution-wise.
No question. I mean, you know, again, we talked about this yesterday. Vancouver, they're just this interesting. They're a puck possession team, but it like almost like with a defensive mindset.
Yeah.
So you think about, there's no doubt, as we all agree, Philip Forsberg didn't do enough. He had a lot of shifts where he's in the D zone, and then they finally get the puck, and then they dump it and change. You know,
right.
I mean, if you can't get ozone starts, if you can't be in the ozone with that line and they have to play defense, that, I mean, that's exactly the game plan for Vancouver, right? That's exactly what they want to do. That's the best way to neutralize a great line, is to make that line play defense. So the Preds have to figure out a way to flip that around some tonight.
Lot of votes for Rev Road on the text line. Just Rev Road.
Rev Road.
I like it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Why didn't I think about that? Instead of Rev Rex, Rev Road. Okay. Sure. Add it to the list. Put that on my tombstone too.
It's a long tombstone. You're gonna have a lot of different names on that tombstone. Rocks Road, Rev Road, Rex Rod. We can go on and on.
Also some like percent and star and ampersand for the yes. swear words that people yeah. want to call me too.
Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here on the program. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
A 9 minute rant. 9 minute.
You know what I mean? Like, we're just going to scratch the whole thing up. It's going to be, and then we'll put some music to it.
Now it's on them. But we blame John Hines, especially me. We blame John Hines for everything. And John Hines and David Poile deserved a lot of the blame for things when they didn't go well. We blamed Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. And I think they probably deserved a fair share of the blame when things didn't go well. But at some point, you know, I'm not blaming the coach because I think he's a good coach. And I think the only reason they're here is because he's a good coach. So I'm not putting this one on the coach.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joseph, the floor is yours.
Well, you heard the clip there. That was Jared. That caught my attention yesterday. And so I was like, well, I'm really sorry, folks, that I have to use Jared for another rant. Thanks, Jared. But I have to do it. I mean, I have to use this. I have to use this for content because I think this is bigger than him. This brings up something that we've talked about, but I think it deserves another mention here, okay? Brings up an issue, you know, he has multiple issues, I guess, part of this. One of them being, you know, the idea of this is my take, and then I'm going to die on that hill no matter how ridiculous it gets. Salary cap. Okay, that's very much a Skip Bayless formula, right? Like at some point, Skip Bayless decided LeBron's overrated, so now he spends decades quadrupling down, looking and sounding ridiculous, losing credibility, et cetera, et cetera. But the issue at hand for this is, and again, not at all confined to Jared, it is the overrating of coaching. That's the thing that stands out. He's the only reason the Preds are here. Andrew Brunette is who he's talking about. Remember, John Hines, a horrific, awful coach. Andrew Brunette, a verified genius. It's a complete 180, okay? So Andrew Brunette is the one reason the Preds are here. It's not because Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist came in to form an incredible top line with Philip Forsberg. It's not because Forsberg had a career year, best goal scoring year in franchise history. It's not because Roman Josi's been the best defenseman in the NHL for the second half of the season. It's probably going to finish second for the Norris. It's not because UC Saros, even in an off year for him, is still one of the best goalies in the NHL. It's not because of the emergence of Luke Evangelista and Jeremy Lazan. Not because of the gritty reliability of Ryan McDonough and Colton Sissons. Not because of the bevy of role players who have stepped up their games. Nope. It's just the coaching. That's it. Just that coaching is why they're here, and it's infallible, and it can never be criticized. Now, look, I think Andrew Brunette has been excellent this season. I think he's going to finish second in the Jack Adams to the guy he's coaching against in this series, and I think he should get consideration for that award. Now, coaching is very important, and I don't see how you could watch this team this season and not think the Preds have upgraded there. But if you listen to Jared, they went from a coaching atrocity to a coaching genius. It's just goofy, like complete lack of critical thinking. Coaching is very important, okay? It's critical. It's not, and it will never be more important than talent, okay? And the thing is, for a guy who gushes and drools over these sports hagiographies that are sold as they're sold as documentaries, like the Jordan one, or like the Patriots one, you think that would come across, right? Like Phil Jackson, hey, great coach. Why? I think maybe having MJ and Pippen helped. Bill Belichick, yeah, we want to talk about his record with or without Tom Brady. I mean, I'm sorry, but Tom Brady made him a great coach. And I think Andrew Burnett would be the first to raise his hand and say, you know, my coaching career here with the Preds will be largely dictated by the players I'm coaching. It just, you know, let's keep things in their proper perspective. A lot of people deserve credit for where the Preds are today.
First off, congratulations on your use of the word hagiography. That was well done by you. Secondly, I agree with you. Now, look, Andrew Burnett, when you start to list off accomplishments that they've had this year, like I think Andrew Burnett deserves a lot of credit for what you've seen out of Nyquist and O'Reilly and Yossi and Evangelista and some of the emergence that we've seen from some of their young guys, but certainly the way that they play. Like I think the way that they play and the messaging from Andrew Burnett, I think a lot of that has been really important this year. So clearly he's done a good job, but I'm with you. Like, it's still about, it comes down to the players. Like Roman Yossi didn't all of a sudden become an elite player this year. He's been an elite player for a long time. Philip Forsberg has played the best hockey that he's played all year. I think Burnett deserves some credit for that. Like, I think his system really fits in well with what Forsberg can do well. But Forsberg, I mean, he's 2 years ago, he scored 42 goals, had 84 points. It wasn't that far off from what he did this year. So we've seen him do this before. So again, I'm totally with you. Like, I think if you watch this team and you watch their style, it's certainly an upgrade over what it's been. Andrew Burnett, I think, is a very good coach. I think he's going to be a very good coach in this league for a long time. But it does come down to the players, and it does come down to the talent level that you have. And, Joe, one thing that we talked about and one thing that I still wonder about with this team, when it comes to competing for a championship, do the Predators currently have the players to do that, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, I think they clearly have the system to do that. Do they have the players to do that? That ultimately is going to be what it comes down to. So it's one of those conversations where two things can be true. Coaching is very important, but to your point, it will never supersede the importance of the players that you have.
I got a 706 area code, which I don't know what that is. Says, Jared's right about coaching. You scoundrel, Skip Bayless, Joe. Burnett got the team to overperform. This is an all-time bad rant. Again, this is where you're struggling with the two things being true. Just said he was excellent this year. He should be there for the Jack Adams. He'd be right there, okay? Andrew Burnett got this team to score 266 goals, which tied the franchise record, which was set by the 06-07, loaded 06-07 team. Third on the list is 262 goals 2 years ago by that idiot moron, non-offensive coach who doesn't have a clue, John Hines. Explain that to me.
Right. I mean, I think sometimes we forget that and don't want to do it. Look, Burnett, if you want to say he got the team to overperform, sure. I mean, I agree, but it doesn't take away from what the players have done too. Like it sounds like people got to get over, like, we're not trying to put Andrew Burnett down here. Like he's done a great job. We're just saying, and it's not 100% responsible for Andrew Burnett is all we're saying.
Yeah. I mean, look, take your choice, and you can take Andrew Burnett. You can go in any sport you want. Take your choice. Best player, best coach, best roster, best coaching staff. I mean, I'm laughing at you if you do anything but take the best roster, the best player, the people who actually play the games. You know?
Agreed.
It's just second in line of importance, and it always will be. It always has been. But some people get – I mean, look, go to my guy Nick Saban. We've talked about this before. I'll talk about it again. I covered him when he coached at Michigan State. He was an average coach, and he had some talent, but he didn't have the most loaded teams ever. And then he found a way to become the best recruiter, to go to Louisiana and Alabama and have everything in place. By the way, I'm listening to Big Joe and Chase yesterday talking about players getting paid for the first time in the last couple of years. I'm like, really? Is that right? Actually, I should separate them. That was Big Joe. Nick Saban found a way to have the most talented teams in college football. Was he coaching great? Yes. Was his coaching or was his GMing more important? It's right. Not close.
Now, I will say what you're looking for in professional sports is a coach that can elevate And then ultimately, when you have the roster that is good enough to win, a coach that can elevate that roster even more, right? Like, there are coaches in professional sports that elevate rosters that they have. There's no question about that. Like,
yes.
Eric Spoelstra in Miami for the Heat, he elevates the roster that he has every single year. There's no doubt about it. John Cooper is a great coach in Tampa Bay. They have a great amount of talent. I think that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. John Cooper is a coach. He's done an exceptional job this year. They are really good, and their talent level is not what it's been over the last couple of years. Now, he's got Nikita Kucherov. They put up 150 points this year, too. So that helps. Like, you need the great coach, and you need the roster that can also, when you have that paired together, that's how you win championships.
Right. Tyler asked, my question for you is, would Hines have this team with these players and 99 points? I'm going to guess no. Again, again, two things being true. I think Brunet did a better job than Hines did here. Brunet's first year. But like we're acting like there's some, again, complete 180 or this massive gap in the two. I don't know. I mean, the Minnesota Wild must be stupid for hiring John Hines to be the head coach. You know, I mean, he has to have some traits that allow him to win. They did win some with the Preds. He did get to the playoffs with the Preds. But no, I would pick Andrew Brunet.
No question about it. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Adam Vengen. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators and Canucks series and for game two coming up tonight. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards. Free shipping with no minimum purchase. Triple points on two purchases and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.